Added to the Air Force inventory in 1954, the F-100 North American Super Sabre was the first of the supersonic Century series of fighters introduced in the 1950s and 60s. It was the first U.S. Air Force aircraft to exceed Mach 1 in level flight. It was also the first aircraft employed by the Wild Weasels, whose crews used radar-seeking missiles to destroy enemy radar and surface-to-air missile installations. The two-seat F-100F also gained fame flying high-risk missions north of Vietnam's DMZ as a fast-forward air controller. The operation was known as Commando Sabre, and the F-100s used the call sign Misty. Charles Boyd graduated from Air Force pilot training in 1959, and he soon found himself in the cockpit of the hottest fighter jet of the day, the F-100. On April 22, 1966, during his 105th combat mission, Boyd's F-105 was hit by anti-aircraft fire, and he was forced to eject. He would spend the next 2,488 days as a prisoner of North Vietnam. Returning home in February 1973, as one of the POWs repatriated during Operation Homecoming, he chose to remain in the military. He had a 36-year-long career in the Air Force, retiring as the Deputy Commander-in-Chief of U.S. European Command in Germany. He is the only POW to attain the rank of a 4-star general. Dick Rutan grew up in an aviation-oriented family, and he spent his youth building model airplanes with his younger brother, Bert. Rutan's military career began at age 19 as an Air Force aviation cadet. He advanced into fighter aircraft, serving in Vietnam. In 1967, he volunteered to become one of the founding Misties of Operation Commando Sabre. It was high-risk flying. In the 3 years the Misties flew, 28% of them were shot down. Dick Rutan flew 325 combat missions over Vietnam, ejecting twice from Air Force aircraft during his career. He retired having been awarded the Silver Star, 5 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 16 Air Medals, and a Purple Heart. His time as a civilian has been equally celebrated. He received the Presidential Citizen's Medal from President Reagan, and the 1987 Collier Trophy for piloting the now-famous Voyager experimental airplane on the only non-stop, non-refueled, around-the-world flight in history. Dean Cutter Cutshall of Fort Wayne, Indiana, acquired his North American Century Series fighter in 1996. Originally a U.S. Air Force aircraft, it served with the Turkish Air Force until the late 1980s when it was brought back to the U.S. Now immaculately restored in the markings of 6-time ace Francis Gabby Gabreski, the F-100F always wows during its rare airshow appearances. Warbirds in Review presents Dean Cutshall's F-100 and the American heroes General Charles Boyd and Lieutenant Colonel Dick Rutan.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm David Hartman. What a privilege to be with you all here today and for all of us to share in honoring our veterans, our active duty military, and the civilians who are so committed to maintaining the great history and the experiences of these patriots who have defended our freedom and continue to do that today. Please welcome our two guests, Dick Rutan and General Chuck Boyd. Oh, wait, stand by. I just messed up. Dick, not yet, Dick. Dean. Dean Cutshall owns this beautiful airplane. Dean, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about your airplane. How did you come by it?
In 1992, John Dilley and I and my crew chief, Paul Swick, went to Tracor, which is in the Mojave Desert, used to be called Flight Systems, and the airplane had been flown back from Turkey about 3 years before that. It was in terrible shape. I made a bid on it and didn't get the bid, unfortunately. About 4 years later, in 96, a gentleman in Texas, Dallas, Texas, called me and said, "Hey, are you interested in the F-100 still?" And I said, "Sure, we'd look at it." John and I and Paul went back to Dallas, Texas, and looked at the bird again and made the same offer we made to Flight Systems, and it was declined. About 6 months later, we get another phone call. It's a little more emergency now, and he says, "Hey, are you still interested?" And I said, "Well, maybe so." He said, "Well, come on down and let's look at it again." So we did. We looked at it, and there was a beautiful T-33 sitting next to it, pristine. And I looked at it and found out that the gentleman also owned the T-33. Looked at John and Paul, and I said, this might be a good deal. So I offered them the same amount that I originally offered him, and I said, "I'll take the F-100 and the T-33. I got both airplanes. So it worked out well for me. I'm glad I waited 5 or 6 years. Brought it back to Fort Wayne, flew it to Fort Wayne, and flew it a couple times. Had some terrible problems with the airplane. Put it to bed for about a year and a half, and $600,000 later, and thanks to my crew chief, Paul Swick, and my engine man, Jim Presbandowski, we know him as Prez, this is what we have today, and it's absolutely beautiful. Prez put a new engine in it, we took the tail off, we took the engine out, we had the tail x-rayed, the slats, everything came off the airplane, and it was completely gone through. Fortunately, we live at a guard base that serviced the F-100s, and every night when I'd walk out, go out and take a look and see what was progressing, there the guard guys were. They loved the airplane, and they said, "Boy, this is great. We enjoy working on it." So that's how we came about the airplane. That's the reason it looks so pristine today. Thanks to my crew chiefs, Paul Swick and Prez, and Gordy's around here someplace, too.
Dean, thank you very much, sir, and thanks for the airplane.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, please welcome our guests, Dick Rutan and General Chuck Boyd. Gentlemen, General, start us off. You flew the F-100 before Dick did, back in the early 60s. What was your experience in the F-100? What was the airplane like, and when and where did you fly it?
Well, as I mentioned to Dick before, I think, first of all, it's the first fighter I ever flew. And I think most guys would tell you the same thing. The first one you fly, it's like your first woman. You may have better ones later, but that first one you're never going to forget. I got into the Aviation Cadet program as a youngster. I was a boy fighter pilot. Didn't have a college degree, but they had this wonderful program where if you could pass the quiz, you could get into flying training and officer training simultaneously. Shortly after I went through, they canceled that and they've never started it again. So timing is everything in life. The only thing I wanted to do was to fly airplanes. From the time I was 7 years old, got my first ride in the Piper Cub, and when I was a teenager, I read Jim Salter's book, The Hunters, and then I knew I wanted to be a fighter pilot. And so besides my parents, I guess they were the two most influential people in my life. The F-100, I did well in pilot training, got an F-100, went there. I knew about the F-100 from the time that it had first test flight, I think, in 53, and it was the first airplane to go supersonic level flight and so on and so forth. So when I got a chance to go to Luke, to fighter gunnery school in that airplane, I was on the top of the world. I wouldn't have traded jobs for anybody in the world or any amount of money. And the airplane was everything I thought it'd be. We had to take six rides in a two-seater here before you could get in the C model. And the very first thing I did when I got in that C model is turn the mirrors in so I could see myself in the mirror and make sure that I wasn't having a dream. I took it up to Wickenburg. There's a little area up there that was supersonic. I rolled that rascal on its back and pointed it down and broke the Mach for the first time in my life. And I figured I had won the lottery of life.
So what about active duty, flying the airplane? What kind of missions? Where were you? Squadrons? Assignments?
Well, maybe it's worth a minute to put this in some kind of context, and Dick will, I think, remember this, I guess, exactly the same. The period in the 50s was one of a drought for the tactical aviation community. The big choice in the early 51 between tactical and strategic air, strategic won for a couple of reasons. Kurt LeMay was a force of nature, and Pete Quesada, who was the tactical guy, well, he lost the toss, and they had one more four-star billet, and Kurt got it. And he was a bomber guy, and he had a president in starting in 52 or 53 who maybe the last one that was really fiscally responsible, and one of the ways he got that way was by limiting expenditures. And he knew he could have nuclear forces and with a deterrent effect that were cheaper than conventional forces. So the money went to SAC. The tactical outfit was hard up. And so a lot of us going through knew that, going through pilot training, and what was happening to kids. Very often they go through gunnery school, but they didn't have an assignment, and they go to a GCI site, a ground control intercept site, and which for a guy like that's fate worse than death. And that's what we all worried about. So, but when we finished, the times were changing a little bit. Some money was going into tactical forces, and I got an assignment to go to the Philippines. And we had paid homage to the nuclear missions by making these tactical airplanes mission nuclear capable, but so we had to do over-the-shoulder stuff and what have you. But we lived for flying air-to-air and air-to-mud. And this was a sweet airplane. It's the only one I knew, but as far as I was concerned, it was the best airplane in the world. A lot of people were thinking it was a dangerous airplane. And, you know, they built 2,294 of them, and 889 of them crashed. And a bunch of kids got killed in them. But for me, the airplane never did a bad thing to me. I never had anything ever happen to it. And I never even had a drag chute failure. It was a perfect airplane for me. And I'll love it till I die.
So you were in the Philippines, but also went to Europe also?
Well, not until I got into the 105.
But that was the extent of the F-100 experience.
That was the experience. When I left that operational tour in the 100, I said goodbye to that airplane, never flew it again.